And you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, hopefully, though I've heard rumors of us being, reports of this station being drowned out by other larger stations of a religious flavor. Well, we'll see about that. Anyway, you can also catch my shows in particular, at freakradio.org. If you go to the Huff website, you can find these shows archived at huffsantacruz.org under the label Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, and the sublabel Lost Shows. Today is January 25th, 2018. Today's show is going to be covering Berkeley and what's going on up there with successful court cases, or at least promising court cases, around rights of homeless folks, the visit of a UN rapporteur to the Berkeley City Hall steps to talk to the first they came for the homeless encampment folks and other homeless activists last Sunday, as well as my, my report on the Santa Cruz City Council, which had its meeting on Tuesday. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So, welcome to Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides on Thursday. I'm going to begin with Berkeley, where I was invited to come up to be both a journalist and an activist in my own way, or information source for the UN rapporteur who was informally visiting encampments, not sure how informally, in Oakland, San Francisco, Berkeley, and then was planning to go down to Los Angeles. We all got together on the steps of City Hall where the encampment First They Came for the Homeless, is what it's called, was situated, has been there for a month or two now. And to kind of give you some background, I'm going to read to you from the Berkeley side, which is a local publication, account of a recent judicial decision about a week ago regarding some campers some residents, because that's really what they are. They aren't out there having weenie roasts. They're surviving. And the First They Came for the Homeless encampment. So this is from the January 23rd Berkeley Side online edition by Natalie Orenstein. Judge allows Berkeley homeless group to sue city, dismisses case against BART. A federal judge said a homeless group has made plausible claims that the city of Berkeley seized some campers' belongings illegally and suppressed their political expression by evicting them. In his Friday order, U.S. District Court Judge William Alsup allowed parts of the First They Came for the Homeless group's lawsuit to go forward, but threw out other claims that the city engaged in cruel and unusual punishment and discriminated against people with disabilities. And he also dismissed allegations against the Bay Area Rapid Transit, or BART, which is the property on which First They Came for the Homeless was situated for 10 months after having been moved on a weekly or daily, depending on the actual time basis, by Berkeley City Police from one encampment to the next as they attempted to protest, what they called the Poor Tour, or the what began as the Snub the Hub protest, where the Hub was a multi-million dollar center set up to essentially shift papers and served as an additional level of complication for homeless people trying to get into homeless services rather than an actual facilitating agency. Anyway, continuing, we are pleased that the judge is allowing us to proceed on a number of claims against the city, said Emily Rose John, a lawyer for the homeless group, in an email to Berkeleyside. Five members of First They Came for the Homeless, which considers itself an intentional community and protest camp, sued Berkeley and Bart in October. Bart had just given the campers notice to leave their post by the Here There art installation near the Berkeley-Oakland border, where they had been living on Bart land for almost a year. The campers' lawsuit claimed the transit agency was illegally forcing the group onto the streets and alleged that the city of Berkeley had also violated the group's constitutional rights during a prior set of evictions from other locations on public property in the city. And I've discussed before and played interviews with Mike Zint, Mike Lee, others from the First They Came for the Homeless encampment, who talked about the history of poor bashing that was going on by the so-called liberal city council and its liberal, well, not so liberal city manager, but supposedly liberal mayor Jesse Arguin. And you've heard, I think, activist Carol Denny talk about that on the air, as well as others, me included. The judge initially granted the camp a temporary restraining order against BART, then later allowed the agency to evict the group. Since then, many of its members have set up camp on the lawn in front of Old City Hall on Martin Luther King Jr. Way. And that's where I was on Sunday, when you're going to be hearing some actual audio from that meeting with the UN rapporteur. And others have moved to Aquatic Park or stayed near the now fenced-off Here There site. And there, in fact, now are sort of three branches of the First They Came for the Homeless encampment. And then reportedly, a sudden toleration policy of encampments throughout Berkeley. Although I haven't been to other encampments to get direct information about this. That seems to be what I've heard from different activists at this Sunday meeting I went to. Judge Alsup also made an unusual order at the time, requiring both parties in the lawsuit to come up with a practical plan to house all the homeless residents in Berkeley over the winter, attempting to gauge whether the city is doing everything it can to address the homelessness crisis. And I think we've talked about that on the air. The city essentially said, oh, we have many plans to build buildings, and anything else would be too expensive, and we're working very hard on it, and how can we do it? And whereas First They Came for the Homeless attorneys that came up with a specific series of locations and costs for building campgrounds that would at least house people in tenable, if certainly not luxury, situations over the winter. But this was not an injunctive order by the judge to get the city to do anything. It was his attempt, I guess, to clarify, and it was greeted very favorably by activists and their attorney associates as a way of exposing the city of Berkeley government's hypocrisy and sweet-talking while people were freezing and getting harassed, moved from place to place, and dying on the streets of Berkeley, getting ill. As you know, flu is rampant these days, or certainly a more major threat than it was before. Here's more. On January 19th, Alsup dismissed the case against BART, Barrier Rapid Transit, because the campers moved off that land and are no longer involved in a controversy there. So the police were able to wall them off, and so they somehow lost their right to sue. That sounds fair, doesn't it? He also said the campers' allegations that Berkeley violated their Eighth Amendment rights and targeted campers with disabilities were implausible. And again, my response to that is that if you are targeting people that are clearly disabled, then whether you're actually targeting them or simply impacting people who are disabled really becomes academic. What's important is that you are, in fact, impacting them. But again, the devil, I guess, is in the details. He also said the plaintiffs who had joined the group after it was already at the Here There site could not be victims of the city's actions during earlier evictions, he wrote in his order. And since people were coming and going, and the earlier evictions happened, I think, before January of 2017, but there were a mass of them, 15, 16, 17 evictions from camp to camp, seizures of property, abuse of people. But some of those people became discouraged and left. Other new folks came, and then there was a period of 8 or 9 months when the city laid off, perhaps fearing this kind of lawsuit if they didn't. And so there weren't many people left from the original group. There were also divisions in the campground, controversies that came up, some of which you may hear about in the upcoming audio. However, the judge said there are sufficient allegations at this stage that the city violated two campers' First, Fourth, and 14th Amendment rights, denying Berkeley's motion, the city of Berkeley, the government of Berkeley's motion, to dismiss the case altogether. The complaint adequately alleges, the judge writes, that Berkeley targeted First They Came for the homeless for eviction in harsh winter months based on the content of the group's speech and its political engagement, lending credence to a First Amendment claim, Alsup wrote in his order. In particular, plaintiffs allege that the group publicly opposed Berkeley's response to the city's homelessness crisis, or non-response, or police response, I might add, including by establishing themselves in prominent places near administrative buildings, writing op-eds, and attending city council meetings. In response to the group's criticisms, Berkeley allegedly began an aggressive campaign of evictions that included removing the group from 12 locations between October 2016 and January 2017. Berkeley did dismantle a number of campsites established by First They Came for the Homeless members in 2016 and 2017, while leaving some other homeless encampments alone. City spokesman Mate Chaco said Tuesday that the judge's order was just one step in the process and that the city has not yet presented its evidence against the plaintiff's claims. The city's motion to dismiss was based solely on the plaintiff's allegations, and no evidence was presented to the court, Chaco said in a statement. The city is confident that once the facts are presented, it will prevail on the plaintiff's remaining claims regarding unlawful seizure of property and First Amendment retaliation. Maybe they can dig it out of the trash or the landfills where they dumped it. I speak not as one who witnessed the city's dump trucks moving, but frankly, based on my broader experience with city authorities elsewhere and my belief in the credibility of First They Came for the Homeless spokespeople. But of course, the judge will decide on the basis of evidence presented by the city, which should include, I would imagine, and presented by the homeless, which should include the kind of video that the attorneys in Fresno were able, with the help of the photo work of Simone and Mike Rhodes, to get a $2.3 million judgment back in 2007 and an injunction that allowed Fresno encampments under freeways for about 5 or more years after that time. Unfortunately, not up into the present. In the past, city representatives have said they evicted the campers due to health and safety concerns and complaints not to quell their protest. The judge also said allegations that the city took campers' belongings that could not be stored during evictions and both disposed of some and stored others so they were difficult to retrieve without due process were plausible enough for Fourth and 14th Amendment claims to continue. Fourth Amendment says that no one shall seize your property without a search warrant or probable cause of a crime. 14th Amendment says that you shall be entitled to due process of and equal protection of the laws. The order also allows plaintiffs to file an amended complaint reinstating their dismissed allegations so they can bring up the allegations that it was a matter of cruel and unusual punishment, that it was a matter of disability discrimination, and so forth. Attorney Johns with the Oakland firm Siegel, Yee, and Brunner said they're still deciding whether to do so. One of the plaintiffs, who goes by the name Jim Squatter, said Tuesday that he had been hoping for a more significant vote of confidence from the judge. Comments by Alsup at earlier hearings, including indications that he might require the city to turn public sites into sanctioned encampments made Squatter optimistic. It's not the sweeping win we had hoped for, but we advance, Squatter said. It seems to me that the judge is trying to narrow our approach to this. It doesn't look to me that he's going to house all the homeless, or allow them to house themselves, I would say. And then there is a picture of the special repartor. If you go to this article on Berkeley side, you can see a special repartor, Liliana Farhi, who is on the steps of City Hall talking to folks. And I was also on the steps recording her, and you're going to hear some of that. The first they came for the homeless encampment, this Berkeley side story continues. Former members who established the camp but who have since found housing have questioned the continued use of that name. Was among several in the Bay Area that got visits last weekend from the United Nations Special Rapporteur Liliana Farha. She described conditions she observed throughout the region as cruel and akin to those in slums she has seen in less developed countries. First they came for the homeless has long argued that the city should permit encampments like theirs, which operate under a strict set of rules on substance use and cleanliness, if no permanent housing is provided instead. Intentional communities are the direction to go to. And by the way, that's not what Santa Cruz is doing with its gravel pit on a floodplain in a barbed wire area where you have to be transported in by a vehicle, where you essentially are limited, and their limited number of people are allowed in so that people can't form their own shelters. I don't know if you have to be gone during the day or not in this proposed so-called boneyard campground that Santa Cruz is cooking up. But it's a further constriction and really brutalization of homeless people compared to the San Lorenzo campground, which is itself only allows a fraction of folks. But it's in conjunction with the suspension of the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, again by police fiat, so it could be done at any, it could be removed at any time, and they could begin reinforcing it. Just enforcing it again at the whim of the police chief or under pressure from right-wing groups, because the law hasn't changed, and the city council, of course, is ill-disposed to change the law. Intentional communities are the direction to go, Jim Squatter said. They don't cost the city anything. They're self-governing, self-reliant, and offer homeless residents a sense of dignity, he said. The city has not taken any steps to evict the growing encampment from the old City Hall lawn. We have a complaint-based system that focuses on the health and safety, Chaco said. Health and safety concerns are what drives our enforcement process. Actually, it's the power of people protesting that has forced them to back down from their arbitrary homeless bashing that they've been doing year after year and decade after decade, and Santa Cruz has also been doing. And the reality in Santa Cruz is also somewhat the same, although we haven't had the kind of organized protests and the daily, nightly protests that have happened up in Berkeley. We've had a weekly protest that then became a nightly protest with the Freedom Sleepers and the Survival Sleepers, and then people encamped in sort of quiet defiance at the post office and then moving to the San Lorenzo Park area. It's the visibility of homeless and the reality that you cannot pretend they're not there anymore, or pretend that you can terrify them out of town, particularly based upon the number that actually live here or did live here when they could afford to start with, or even the number that come through. Chaco, the city spokesperson, said the city encourages residents to report health and safety concerns through 311. Earlier this month, a camper at the old City Hall knocked over a candle in his lean-to, setting fire to his property and bushes, which firefighters had to cut down. Nobody was injured. According to a neighbor, the man had been living at the site before first they came for the homeless arrived. Squatter said all the campers have been more careful since. Squatter said new people have begun camping next to the group at Old City Hall, trying to replicate their intentional community model. And that's something that I noticed, that the encampment had grown from several weeks before, when it was only 10 or 12 tents to 30 or 40 tents. And, of course, that's happening all over the Bay Area. And then of interest also is a series of comments on the Berkeley side web page, which you often find something similar with the Santa Cruz Sentinel, or Urinal, as I like to call our local paper. I've been able to really research that recently because even though I subscribe, full disclosure and full apologies to listeners, to the Santa Cruz Urinal, and I should be allowed access, the Sentinel is not allowing me access to its website. And when I try to get through to them, I get cut off. So I'll keep trying, but having some problems. But it's interesting, if you go to this website, you see the usual ranting by bigots hostile to the notion that homeless people have any rights at all. If only they get rid of these damn bums, yada, 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 the damn judge, et cetera, et cetera. There is one comment I've noticed that's interesting. Of all the people involved in the events, writes a guy called Sam Spade, or perhaps Of all the people involved in the events that form the basis of the complaint, it is Mike Lee and Mike Zint who are the most prominent. Mike Lee was running for mayor, was evicted on at least four different occasions. He was registering voters and had an election banner present at all four. Without a doubt, the city interfered with his constitutional rights. Secondly, the city, by its own admission, targeted this group and repeatedly, while ignoring others who posed a greater public safety threat. The city has extremely poor legal representation because of the named plaintiff's status. The plaintiff's case is extremely weak because Lee and Zint are not included, as well as Michelle Lott and James Cartmill. It is this core group who are continually the brunt of unconstitutional actions. I guess these are the names of some of the people involved in the lawsuit. Except for one plaintiff, the rest are looking for a payday. The city better hope and pray that Lee and Zint aren't included. If they are, the council will have to pay thousands in damages. So actually, this entire thread is hostile to the homeless folks seeking the lawsuit. And I will sort of leave it there. rather than go into details, but I will actually turn instead to the dialogue that happened on the steps or around the steps of, I mean, actually it's the encampment that has been on the in the lawn area in front of Old City Hall for the last month or two. After, of course, a musical break.
Disney's live-action musical version of Beauty and the Beast hits theaters later this month.
It will feature Disney's first gay character.
The film's gay moment has been blown out of proportion.
It's so-called gay propaganda.
A gay character in a Disney movie will promote tolerance. It'll pollute your children's minds with the idea that who they are is okay.
How could Disney make this choice? How could Mickey Mouse agree? He should spell his name M-I-C-K-E-Y-L-G-B-T. They'll inject their propaganda until everyone is gay. So it's time to boycott Disney now. It's time to make them pay.
Insane, it's bizarre, this progressive open-mindedness is something that you don't see every day.
Ow. Leave your kids in the car. It received a PG rating, but in this case, PG stands for pretty gay.
Keep it far from your niece and your nephew.
Or your nephew might act like your niece. Get your purse, leave your snack, and we're not coming back till it's straight.
Good and straight! Kill the release!
When I bring my young children to a lavish musical with fabulous costumes starring the hot guy from Downton Abbey and featuring six-time Tony Award winner Audra McDonald, it isn't to make them gay. It's to make them extra straight. I say we kill the release. Who's with me?
I am!
Yes!
There's a twist in the plot, and not only is he gay, he's introspective and he's ethical as well. But he likes other guys, so ignore those other traits and teach your children that he'll probably burn in hell.
There's no sex, but there's lots of acceptance. Rather queer for a period piece.
And it's far too risque. Grab your family and take them to 50 Shades of Grey. Now there's a good old-fashioned love story. Why can't we go back to the wholesome days of Disney films? When there was a d*** hiding on every poster and Pocahontas was dating Mel Gibson?
We are scared, so we ban anything we don't condone. And this new movie has gay undertones at least. There's no cause for alarm and it won't do any harm. But let's pretend we're up in arms.
Speaking of arms.
Kill the release! Kill the release!
Kill the release!
Kill the release!
Ooh, cute dress though.
So it's January 21st, about 12:20. I'm up here in Berkeley, crossing Martin Luther King Jr. Street on Alston Way, heading for the First That Came for the homeless encampment. And I guess an adjacent encampment as well, or two adjacent encampments. Looks like the number of tents has grown from 10 to, oh, I don't know, to start counting here. What, 20 tents on the right side? How's it going, man?